Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero as we enter the 7 o'clock hour of our program tonight, going until 9 p.m. this evening. We talked about the Adam Frazier trade in hour number one. We talked about the Chiefs parting ways with Justin Ross as well. You can go back and listen to that through the Odyssey app. All of our podcasts from all of our shows are right there on that platform. I want to talk about the All-Star game, because it was much more intriguing than I thought it would be. I actually enjoyed the All-Star game yesterday, Chris.
You watched it start to finish?
I didn't watch it start to finish, no.
How much did you watch?
I didn't start watching until, man, I want to say right before Mikel Garcia's first at-bat. I think that was when I first turned it on. It was right around the fourth or fifth inning.
I turned it on the second inning, and I switched back to the WNBA game between the Fever and the Sun. And I was like, that's all I need to see from it.
Yeah,
fair point. I just need to see the second inning. Okay, that's enough.
It got better after that. You know, the sixth and seventh innings were fun. The AL was able to come back and tie it in the top of the ninth inning. It was fun. I really did enjoy it. I mean, the highlights of the All-Star game for me, excluding the four Kansas City Royals who got a chance to participate yesterday, the recreation of Hank Aaron's iconic 715th home run that they did at Truist Park yesterday, that is one of the cooler things that I've seen implemented into a game in terms of technology ever. That was sick. To honor Hank Aaron in that manner on, you know, 7/15, July 15th, with the 715th home run, which broke Babe Ruth's record. That was phenomenal. Absolutely iconic, and good on Major League Baseball for a tribute of that nature to somebody like Hank Aaron in the city that he made so much history in with Atlanta. The second thing that stood out to me was extra innings. Because like I said, the American League was down 6-0 going into the seventh inning. They scored four runs in the seventh, two in the ninth, and ended up a 6-6 tie going into what would have been extra innings. They're not going to do extra innings in an All-Star game. So they decide they're going to go to a swing-off. Line up 3v3, American League, National League, and just let these guys pound home runs to decide who's going to be the winner. Ended up being Kyle Schwarber knocking out a trio of home runs, a hat trick in the swing off to help the National League secure the win. He was ultimately named as the All-Star Game MVP. Fascinating to me. You know, you have a certain number of swings, certain number of outs. There's no clock on it. Wouldn't it be great if Major League Baseball like put that format into a derby of sorts, where a guy's primary goal is to only hit home runs? There's no clock on it. They just have like a certain number of outs or a certain number of swings to accomplish the number of home runs that they're able to hit. Wouldn't that be cool if Major League Baseball...
Are you talking about the home run derby?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if Major League Baseball could do something like that?
I mean, people are going to complain about whatever format they use.
Oh, wait. They did that for 20 years.
Yeah, then
they decided not to.
Yeah, they're going to complain about whatever format that they have.
But then, like, to play a game and then do a swing-off, when in the home run derby, you have guys tie, and instead of going into, like, a small, like, hey, you have five swings here. How many home runs can you hit in five swings? Nope. We're going to say that Cal Raleigh advances to the semifinals over Brent Rooker because his home run went in literally a hundredth of an inch farther than Brent Rooker's did. What? We're bringing out we don't even have, like, not even real measuring tape, just like analytical, you know, measuring tape to try to determine who I don't know. I don't know why we have a home run derby format in the All-Star game and we don't have the home run derby format in the actual home run derby. I'll move off my soapbox.
There's always going to be a format that people don't like, or people are like a very vocal minority is loudly complaining about, and they're going to change it. That's just the nature of the game. They've been changing a lot because of slump in ratings, but I don't think that has to do with the format. I think that has to do with baseball's lack of national appeal.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can change the format and that'll save it. It's just most of these people that you see in that derby that they had on Monday night, most people don't know who those people are, because they're not paying attention to other teams and other markets outside of their favorite teams.
Well, and you can't even get, at this point, it feels like the slam dunk contest in the NBA, right? It feels a little bit, even the 3-point contest in the NBA is getting that way, where you can't even get the best of the best to compete in those things anymore. You're not getting the Vince Carters and the LeBron Jameses of the early to mid 2000s to compete in the dunk contest anymore.
Well, I don't think, has LeBron ever done it?
I thought he did it early in his career.
I don't think he's ever done it.
But now it's like Mac McClung. You're getting guys from the G League. And yeah. Mac McClung put on a show in the dunk contest. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but nobody wants to see him in the
but
dunk contest.
But that guy's not even on an NBA roster.
No. Nobody wants to see
him. You pulled
a
dude from the G League to compete in the dunk contest right now.
We want to see Anthony Edwards do it. We want to see the young guys do it.
That's what the home run derby feels like now, right? Like, you didn't get Aaron Judge in the home run derby. You didn't get Shohei Ohtani and Eugenio Suarez in the home run derby, right? You look at the major league leaders in home runs. The only guy that was there competing that was in the top 10 in home runs in this league was Cal Raleigh. Everybody else is like, nah, I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, because it, as we talked about on Monday, ring culture, I think, has shifted the importance for that people place on the All-Star format, and it's just not that important anymore. And that, you know what? That's fine. It's okay if it's an outdated ideal and it starts to lose popularity, because it still makes money. People still watch it. It's just not as much as it used to be, and that's fine. If it's not if the All-Star game, All-Star week is not a mainstream thing anymore for baseball, that's fine. Because you know what? They still make money off of it. And for the people that watch it, most of them still enjoy it to some extent. Maybe not as much as they used to, but they still enjoy it to some extent.
Somebody in the text line just pointed out, you know, the old home run derby format, it used to be like a 3 or 4 hour affair. I get it.
I mean, it was long as hell.
It was a better product, in my opinion.
It was too damn long. I do agree with that. I'm not trying to watch 3 hours of a home run derby. 2 hours tops. Once we get past 9 o'clock, I'm like, yeah, y'all got to wrap this up, man.
Yeah, so what you're saying, what I'm coming to a consensus on here is that our generations are to blame for this. Millennials and Gen Zs, with our inability to pay attention to anything for longer than 4 minutes at a time, is what has killed the old home run derby format.
I could do that for football, but for baseball, yeah, 2 hours tops. 2 hours tops of that, and it's just like it's 2 hours of back gone, and I'm like, okay, that's enough. That's enough of that. Like, yeah, that's I'm cool with it. And not only that, but like, baseball itself is not better the longer it goes.
No, that's fair.
Ever since they've put in the pitch clock and they've cut out all the extra, you know, trim the extra fat, it's a lot better.
I would agree.
2.5 hour games, a lot better than three and a half hour games. Like, soccer, great, because it's less than 2 hours for a game. The only sport I'm interested in watching for more than 2.5 hours is football. That's it.
I could watch basketball all day every
day. Yeah, but basketball is usually about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, college basketball game is typically like almost right at 2 hours. Yeah. It can extend a little bit beyond that depending on if it's a close game or overtime
and I've
or whatever
been,
else.
I went to the KU Oklahoma game in Lawrence when Buddy Hield was there, and they played to what, like three overtimes?
Yeah.
And even I was sitting there in double overtime like, bro, like I gotta work in the morning. Like, let's get this figured
out.
Let's wrap this up, guys. Like, somebody win this game, because I gotta fight, because this was when they were still doing construction on K-10, and so getting out of Lawrence was a pain in the ass trying to get back here. And so, like, whatever that street was that led to K-10 back then, was a pain in the ass because it was always backed up real bad. Yeah, no, I was sitting there double overtime like, bro, get it over with.
Somebody take a two possession
lead,
please.
Win this game so I can go home.
Fair. But that, I say all that, I want to bring it back to what I got into this All-Star conversation to discuss. And that was the four players for the Kansas City Royals that participated in the All-Star game yesterday. Carlos Estevez came in. He pitched an inning of phenomenal baseball. He struck out the side, in fact. He did issue one walk, but also came away with three strikeouts in his one inning of work. The only guy that I saw really struggle yesterday was Chris Bubich, who pitched a third of an inning. He gave up two hits, three earned runs, including a home run in the game, as he ended up with an All-Star Game ERA of 81. Rough one for old Chris Bubich, but that's all right. That's all right. Just give up all of your earned runs in the All-Star Game when it doesn't matter. Come back, continue to pitch really, really well, starting on Friday with the second half of the season. And then I look at the two position players for the Kansas City Royals, Mikel Garcia, Bobby Witt Jr. Mikel did not have a hit in this game, but he was able to generate a walk in one of his two plate appearances. He stole second base, got to third, and was then promptly driven in by Bobby Witt Jr., which was fun seeing that happen. Then you had Bobby himself, who was 1-for-2 in the game, two RBIs. He had a double down the right field line. He scored two runs in the, scored a run in this game. And if not for the three-run home run by Brent Rooker, if the American League wins, and maybe he plays a role in that, in the swing, you know, whatever, Bobby Witt Jr. could have had a shot to win All-Star Game MVP yesterday. Not to be, because the National League ends up winning it, and Schwarber gets the award, and rightfully so. All in all, I think three of the four Royals performed fairly well in that All-Star Game yesterday, and I think that that was a welcome sight.
Yeah, it'd be nice if the other guys on the Royals roster stepped up, because they clearly have a lot. Like, the top players on the team are clearly really good. They just don't really seem to have a good middle and bottom of their roster there.
Yeah, and how about Paul Skeens yesterday? He comes out in the top of the first inning, pitching against the American League All-Stars. He goes a scoreless inning, strikes out two, and then promptly gets two runs of run support in the bottom of the first inning, which is more than he's gotten in like 60% of his starts this year. In his starts this year for Pittsburgh, they have failed to score more than one run with him on the bump in like 60% of his starts. Feel bad for that guy. That man needs help.
I mean, you know, he's going to get paid a pretty healthy amount when, you know, he gets a new contract. And I'd say he's living pretty good right now. He's definitely setting himself up to be a premier player. Because, I mean, I assume if nothing happens with him where he's at, he's going to be a top trade target here in a few years. And maybe one of those contending teams in the bigger markets, they trade for him. Maybe they make him a pretty nice contract extension offer, and he gets paid, and maybe he does some winning there.
913-586-7965 is our number. Much more to get to here on the program. We didn't get a chance yesterday because we were off to talk about the Trey Smith extension. 4 years, $94 million. We'll give you our thoughts on it and what that means for the Royal, or for the Chiefs, excuse me, coming up in the very near future with some other guys that could be deserving of extensions with KC. This is After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
I want to begin this segment, this conversation, with a public apology. It was Monday on this show. Chris and I were discussing the Trey Smith extension. Was it going to happen? Was it going to happen? Was it not going to happen? And I had mentioned that there was this Twitter account, Ricky Scoops, that said that Trey Smith was going to sign a four-year extension with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm like, okay, how reputable a source is Ricky Scoops? which reputable.
Pretty Ricky. Ricky's been around since the start of the league year, I think, last year.
He was on it, and I'll give him all the credit in the world. Not only was he right about just talking about this week. Not only was he right about Trey Smith, he was right about Sauce Gardner getting his extension to become the highest paid cornerback in the league. Absolutely right. He was right about Jalen Ramsey getting traded earlier this offseason. He's got something.
Not only that, but he had the numbers almost exactly what they were for the Trey Smith deal.
Yeah, in February.
4 years for 23 a year, and it's 4 years for 23 and a half a year.
Yeah.
So he had the numbers down like on pat from when he had put that out, which was like right around the time that the Chiefs had tagged Trey Smith.
So, well done. Well done, Ricky. All the credit in the world goes to you.
I'll say this. I don't know if you watch if you listen to Pablo Torre Finds Out. They did I think it was yesterday they put out a podcast where they identified someone who had kind of like blown the lid off of the Malik Beasley story about him being implicated in gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out who that guy was. And I will say this. We need to get Pablo Torre to figure out who the hell Pretty Ricky is.
Figure out who this man is.
We need to figure out who this guy is. Because whoever Pretty Ricky is very in tune with the Chiefs. Like he also predicted they would trade for a wide receiver in the middle of the season last year. He predicted Snead to the – originally said the Colts, but then the Titans. He's been pretty on the money with a lot of his predictions, a lot of his leaks or whatnot. I'm going to be very interested to see if they ever figure out who this person is. Because whoever it is, not in tune with every single team, but there's select teams that this person is in tune with.
Yeah, I mean, he's – it's hard to determine like who this man is. Like his cover photo on his Twitter page is Dirty Mike and the Boys from The Other Guys with a picture of a dog wearing an NFL hat and sunglasses kind of embedded within the frame. And then that same dog with the hat and sunglasses is his profile picture. I have absolutely no idea who this individual is, but he absolutely nailed this. And it's funny bringing that up because 6 hours ago, he put on Twitter that the white boy summer for edge rushers continues as the Kansas City Chiefs are closing in on a new deal with George Karloftis. Expect it to be done during camp, but there is serious momentum towards getting an extension done. So not only did he correctly predict Trey Smith, Sauce Gardner, Jalen Ramsey, and others just this offseason, he's now predicting that the Chiefs are going to sign George Karloftis to an extension with the Kansas City Chiefs. So now we just wait for that to come down the pike at this point.
Yeah. So now, and there's, I'm pretty sure that I think the biggest storyline on that is how much money.
Yeah.
Because it damn sure ain't going to be no premium contract for an edge rusher because he's not worth that. I mean, if they want to pay him 18 a year, no more than 20 seems a little high. 18 a year, I could probably get behind that a little bit because that's like about half of what a top edge rusher is going to get in AAV on an extension.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers here of like the average yearly price for different defensive ends in the league, right? Miles Garrett, 40 a year. Yeah, not at that
no
number.
Way. No way.
All right. Danielle Hunter at 35.6, Max Crosby 35.5, nope. Nick Bosa 34.
Nope.
Josh Hines Allen is making $28.25 million.
Nope.
With the Jags. Man, they know how to spend their money. Brian Burns is making 28.2 with the Giants, TJ Watt, Montez Sweat, Rashad Gary, Andrew Van Ginkle making $23 million a year with the Vikings.
Yeah.
I did not expect Andrew Van Ginkle to be making that.
He got paid.
That's
he got
insane. Paid.
I don't think he's worth Van Ginkle money. And I like Karloftis. I'm just not interested in paying him more than 20. And even 20, that number seems a little bit high. Like, that's on the high end of what I would pay him.
So let's look at somebody like Josh Sweat, who just signed a deal with the Arizona Cardinals, right? He was with the Eagles for the entire first 7 years of his career. And he had 11 sacks in 2022, 6.5 sacks in 23. Last year, he had 8 sacks with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was phenomenal during that playoff run for Philly.
He whooped Tooney's ass when they played in the Super Bowl.
He signed a 4-year deal. Excuse me, 5-year deal. Yeah, 5-year. I'm throwing myself for a loop right now. 4-year deal, excuse me, with the Arizona Cardinals for $76.4 million a year. That is an average yearly value of $19,100,000. Does George Karloftis fit into that range? The numbers between those two guys is very similar, I would say. The numbers that Josh Sweat put up in Philly and the numbers that Karloftis has put up thus far in his career with the Chiefs.
I think the big number is going to, if the AAV, the AAV is fine. I'm interested to see what the guarantee is on there. Mm. How much of that is guaranteed? How much of that is signing bonus? I would assume not a whole lot of that is going to be signing bonus. I mean, if it's, what is it, 74 for 72?
It was 4 for 76, and it was $38 million guaranteed with a void in 2029.
How much is the signing bonus?
Looking here, find what the signing bonus on this deal was.
I would assume it's probably not much more than like 20 a year.
Signing bonus was 3.7 with a prorated $1.8 million option for this year.
Okay.
So it's overall signing bonuses accumulate to about $15 million.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Over the course of the 4-year deal.
That seems doable. That seems doable there. I think because like at that point, you could probably get out of that in year 3, which I think is very doable.
Yeah, his base salary this year with Philadelphia with Arizona is going to be $9.8 million. His base salary in 27 and 28, $17 million each. And then he's got a void year in 2029, which will include that if they stick with it, his cap hit in 2029 will only be $5.5 million.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. They can get out of it after 2 years.
Yes.
I'm cool with that. Like, to me, if that's the deal that you pay to Karloftis, I'm cool with that, because if you get buyer's remorse halfway through, you can get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it factors into the equation. So in the first 3 years of George Karloftis' career, he's got 24.5 sacks. Josh Sweat, over the last 3 years with Philadelphia, had 25.5 sacks. Josh Sweat's 28 years old. Karloftis right now is only 24. So I just, looking at the first 3 years of their careers, Sweat had 10 total sacks in his first 3 years with Philly. Karloftis, 24.5. So, again, I think that Josh Sweat contract is one that you can very much look at as a comparable move for him, somewhere between $18 and $20 million. Although I would agree with you, 20 feels like a really, really strong number for George Karloftis.
It feels strong. I can live with that. If it's 4 for 80, 40 guaranteed, I can live with that.
That's what Gregory Rousseau got with the Bills.
Right.
Four for 80.
I can live with that. To me, it's like that's a good middle class edge rusher contract.
He got $50 million guaranteed on 49 specifically. $49 million guaranteed on that 80.
That's a little too high for me.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to shell out.
Yeah, that's a little too high for me.
Yeah. Looking at the text line, somebody said, "Logan, I like George Karloftis, but he's no Max Crosby. 4 for $50 million, math. 50?
Well, you're not going to sign him then.
So that's
you just don't want to sign him then, because there's no way he's taking 4 for $50.
12.5. So Joey Bosa with the Bills, Jonathan Cooper, Carl Granderson, Hassan Reddick, Harold Landry, Eric Armstead at 32 years old, are all going to be making more money than George Karloftis,
I'm going to tell you this right now. You just don't want to sign George Karloftis if you think that's the number that you could get him for. That's not going to happen.
He's going to walk.
Yeah, no, you might as well just get used to having to draft another edge rusher in a couple years.
Another person points out that TJ Watt only getting $28 million a year is insane.
I mean, it was a big number when he got it.
Right, because he signed that contract. He signed it 4 years ago.
Yeah, so like that was the number. So that's actually perfectly fine now. And what is he like, 29, 30 now?
He's 31.
He's 31. Yeah. So it's like he ain't getting much more than that unless it's like a 2 or 3 year deal.
No, and this is the last year of his current contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and I know he wants an extension. Like, mm-hmm. He's already made it known he wants an extension. I mean, you think maybe he gets like maybe a 3 year extension that's really a 2 year extension? He gets like over 30 a year, but like you're not paying him that much more than what right. he's getting now.
Well, and if you factor in his signing bonus, which is just a shade over $9.3 million, his total cap hit for this year is $30.4 million. So he's making 30, not the 21, 28 that we were talking about earlier, but. I mean, I think TJ Watt's going to get a lot of money this offseason. That's what I'm seeing. Even at 32, I mean, even at 31, 32 years old.
If you're him, you're really pushing to try to get that before.
Fair.
Yeah, you're trying to get that before. You're not trying to go into the season and risk getting hurt and losing out on money. So yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he decides to hold out a little bit going into camp so he can try to get a little bit more money.
Especially considering he's coming off of what is probably his least productive full year in the NFL, right? Yeah. I mean, he had 7 sacks his rookie year back in 2017 and had only 5.5 sacks in 2022, but he only played in 10 games. So you're looking at 13, 14.5, 15. He had, of course, the 22.5 sack season back in 2021. He had 19 sacks in 2023, was a first team all pro. Only 11.5 sacks last year. If he can build upon it and do better than he did the previous season, his value is going to skyrocket. So I agree. Somebody says, I think 4 for 76 with $36 million guaranteed. That one's from Lance. That's a pretty strong number, I would say. That puts you at $19 million a year.
I'd be fine with that.
With Karlaftis, right? You're looking at close to half of that is guaranteed money, but not quite half, right? 38 would be exactly half.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Like, I'm cool with that because I would assume the signing bonus is probably going to be, what, 18 of that? So that means that, which would be half of the guaranteed.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'm cool with that.
The question's going to become, is George Karlaftis cool with that? Or if the Kansas City Chiefs are cool with that? Sounds like something's happening, at least according to Ricky Scoops, who I dogged on Monday, but that man had it. He had it right.
Whoever Ricky is, he has sources in a few organizations, not everyone.
Yep.
In a few organizations, and he seems to be right a good amount of time.
He's nailing it right now. He nailed Trey Smith. He nailed Sauce Gardner, which we talked about earlier. Let's see if he's got it right with George Karlaftis. 913-586-7965 is our number. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside producer Chris Unocero. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
It's completely unaware that the ESPYs is going on right now.
I don't even have it on.
I had no idea that the ESPYs was tonight. It's
usually on the Wednesday after of the All-Star break.
Yep. Now that you mention it, yeah, now that I've seen it on my Twitter feed, I get it. Shane Gillis is hosting, and he did like his opening monologue, and he threw some absolute haymakers. One of my favorites here, he pointed out Shea Gilgeous-Alexander was in the crowd, and then said, everyone sitting around him is now in foul trouble. Foul baiter SGA catching strays at the ESPYs.
I mean, I don't know if it's straight. He deserved it. Yeah. He is a foul baiter.
He is, 100%. 100%. I'm with you all the way on that.
He went to the school of James Harden, mm-hmm. and it's a little frustrating to watch. Mm-hmm.
The school of James Harden and Trae Young, that's for certain. Speaking of the NBA, big announcement today. I guess you could call it big. It's a story. It's a headline in the NBA today. Bradley Beal is finally out of Phoenix after he agreed to a contract buyout with the Suns.
Very, very happy as a Suns fan to see that news come across today.
I think both sides are fairly happy about that.
No, he wanted to stay, but it wasn't going to work.
Not for the amount of money they were paying him.
No, it was ridiculous.
It was insane.
That was the worst contract in the NBA. That was the worst active contract in the NBA until they bought him out. It was that bad of a deal.
We're saying that this is better or worse than the Tobias Harris deal that the
how much
Sixers
was Tobias,
gave him?
How much was Tobias making?
Oh, man. Ridiculous amount of money for what he provided.
Because Bradley Beal was making like 53 a year on like a five. It was like 5 years for like over 250, I think.
Yeah, his last year in Philadelphia, he made $39 million.
Yeah, that's not even close. Like, because Beal was constantly hurt. I mean, just he hadn't. I don't think he's played more than like 53 games like the last 3 years.
Four. Yeah, what? He hasn't.
4 years?
Yeah, 60 games he played in 2020, 2021 right. was the last time he played more than 53
games. And then after that, it's been 53 at most, which I think was 53 the last two regular seasons.
Correct.
That's it.
And then he played 50 years in his last year with the Wizards, and his second to last year in Washington, he played only 40 games.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's constantly hurt. He was basically making like over $1 million a game played. Like, that's a terrible deal. That's an absolutely horrendous deal. It's the worst contract in the NBA, especially because he wasn't playing like a superstar when he got it. He had good numbers. He just didn't have superstar numbers, but yeah. He got paid like a superstar.
Yeah, you can't argue the guy is an incredible scorer in this league. I mean, he's a
very good scorer.
Career 21.5 a game.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if that's incredible, but that's a very good scorer. But he's never been like a great player. Overall.
Right. Never a guy that's going to be a number one option. And when you're paying him the amount of money you were paying him, you're paying KD the amount of money that you're paying him, you just gave Devin Booker that massive contract, it didn't make sense. So Beal is out in Phoenix, signing now a two-year, $11 million deal with the Los Angeles Clippers, or that's the plan anyway, once he finally clears waivers.
So basically, he only lost $2 million out of this whole deal. Because he took a 13... He basically agreed to reduce his salary by $13 million. So I think it's like $97 million total that is going to be part of the buyout. Or $96 million, actually, because it's $19 million a year. And actually, it is 97. And then he's going to get his $11 million. So he's basically losing like $2 million total, because I think he had 110 left on his deal.
So he now goes to the Clippers, or at least that's the report, is that he will be joining the Los Angeles Clippers, forming a trio of scoring options in Kawhi Leonard and James Harden, better known as Doubtful and Probable.
I mean, basically, their injury list is good. They're going to have the injury list all-star team, because all of those guys that they have on their roster that are quote-unquote star players
are
always getting hurt.
This is the Brooklyn Nets from 3 years ago, except instead of Kyrie Irving, it's Bradley Beal joining Kawhi and James Harden, not KD and James Harden. They signed Brooke Lopez and traded Norman Powell to the Heat in exchange for John Collins. So, I mean, it's an interesting roster construction that the Clippers have going into next season, right? If everybody stays healthy, this is a team on paper that could be very, very interesting in the Western Conference. Problem is, nobody in their right mind should have any faith at all that this team can stay healthy. Kawhi Leonard has had injury issue after injury issue. James Harden has had injury issue after injury issue. Now you bring in Bradley Beal. They picked, they brought in Ben Simmons. So that's another injury issue that you've got on top of it all.
Injury-less all-star team right there.
Oh, my goodness.
In L.A.
Oh, man. And then you've got John Collins, Bogdan Bogdanovich, Ivica Zubac, who has honestly been the most consistent player for the Los Angeles Clippers over the past three seasons. And then Trenton Flowers, Chris Dunn, former lottery pick who has not panned out in this league.
Man, I thought he was going to be good when he went to Minnesota.
Shout out the Friars, man.
Man, I thought he was going to be good when he came out of Providence.
Patrick Baldwin, a former five-star recruit who ended up, like, he committed to Duke, and then he didn't go to Duke, and he went to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee to play for his dad, and it tanked his draft stock.
Should have went to Duke.
Yep, should have went to Duke. 36-year-old Nicholas Batum is on this Clippers team.
Did you watch that? What is it?
The Court of Gold thing on Netflix.
Yeah, and he was talking. I'm like,
Fournier were just talking out of their ass.
Batum was playing in the NBA when I was in high school. Like, come on now. Like, bro, you are not going to be the catalyst behind an upset of the United States men's national team.
This man was a first-round pick in 2008.
Yeah.
Shout out Nicholas Batum, though. NBA 2K11. If you picked up Nicholas Batum, that guy was going to be a perennial all-NBA guy by, like, year three. I don't know what it was with, like, NBA 2K11 and 2K12. That dude was a dynasty or association mode cheat code. Like, him, Derek Favors, and Terrence Ross were unbelievable in those early to mid 2010s 2K games.
He was real when he played with the Blazers, because I remember my sons played him in the first round. I want to say it was 2010, and he was a real good 3-and-D guy. And he's bounced around and played for a lot of different teams. Been good, but like, bro, you're not a star. You're not beating a team that got LeBron, Steph, and all the other stars on the Joel Embiid. No, you're not beating that team.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was Victor Wembanyama that was there, you know, talking about the team cohesion and I don't care how talented these guys are, we've got a chance. No, it was Nicholas Batum and Evan Fournier. Like two guys who have been nothing but role players or fringe starters in their entire NBA careers, talking the most outlandish crap you've ever heard. And Kevin Durant's like, is that team chemistry going to help you guard Steph? Yeah, it obviously did not.
Dude,
because that man went nuclear in the gold medal game. Yeah, Batum's been a serviceable NBA player his whole career. He's, you know, a career 44% field goal shooter. 37% from three. He's averaged 10 points per game for his career, but he has not had a double digit scoring season in this league since 2017-2018 with the Charlotte Hornets. That was 8 years ago.
And I think he got a big contract when he went there. And so he had to kind of show out a little bit because that was when MJ was the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after that first year, it wasn't that great.
Yeah, honestly, his five-year stretch with the Hornets might have been the best five-year stretch of his career, the first 4 years.
It was.
15 a game, over 11.5 a game. And then his last year in Charlotte, he ended up averaging only 9 points per game despite the fact that he started 72 games that year.
Yeah, he's a little cooked, though. He was starting to get older there.
Woof. 913-586-7965 is our number. We got about an hour and 15 minutes left in our show here today. ESPN came out with its list of the top 10 players at each position in the NFL. I want to talk about that coming up next here on After Hours. Logan Weber, Chris Unocero, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Well, this is interesting. Bill Belichick. Robert Kraft.
They got beef.
They're having a little tete-a-tete in the media right now. Belichick responded to Kraft today after Robert Kraft said that he took a big risk when he offered and ultimately hired Bill Belichick to be the Patriots head coach back in 1999. Belichick, in a statement that he gave to ESPN, said that it was he who took the big risk by joining a franchise with what he described as few resources that was over $10 million over the salary cap. He said, quote, as I told Robert multiple times through the years, I took a big risk by taking the New England Patriots head coaching job. I already had an opportunity to be the head coach of the New York Jets, but the ownership situation was unstable. So, yeah, I mean, if you harken back to 1999, he'd already been hired by the Jets, like the week before he got the Patriots offer. And he ended up accepting the Jets offer, then spurned them.
So what happened was he had it in his contract, because he was the defensive coordinator for them, because Bill Parcells was the head coach. When Bill Parcells retired, he automatically became the head coach for the Jets because it was part of his contract. He was basically coaching waiting. And then he was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to be there. Yeah. I don't want to be that coach. Yeah.
He said he went on to say in the statement that he had been warned by several different coaches, former coaches of the New England Patriots and members of other NFL organizations, that there were a lot of, as he described it, internal obstacles with the New England Patriots head coaching job. So I find this interesting. I mean, dude, the guy was fired a year and a half ago. Like, firstly, why is Robert Kraft still talking about it? And why talk about it in such a negative light? Like, why try to, like, just be like, yeah, Bill Belichick was a great coach. One of the greatest decisions this organization's ever made. We won six Super Bowls with him. And then move the hell on. Why do you have to use these small, subtle little digs? And then, you know, for Belichick to not just let the water go off his back, but he's got to respond in kind. And now we're just watching two elderly men spat with each other in public. Nobody wants to watch this.
I can understand, like, Belichick, you know, telling his side of the story. My thing, though, is, like, if you're Robert Kraft, what? Because, like, first off, Robert Kraft has been, like, hypercritical of Bill Belichick, called him an idiot savant after Belichick left. And, you know, certainly questionable decisions made in his personal life. But as a head coach, I still think his legacy is, for the most part, unassailable. Certainly you can ask questions about post Tom Brady, but honestly, I think you take away, you know, an all-time great quarterback and you give him washed-up Cam Newton and Mac Jones, I don't think you're going to do a whole lot of winning regardless of who's your head coach. But I just don't get why Robert Kraft feels the need to continue to bring up Bill Belichick, because it doesn't matter anymore. Like, he needs to move on.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Like, I get Belichick in his part of it because he was responding to what he has heard from Robert Kraft.
Right.
It's not like he was going out here after he got let go and just talking all types of trash on the Patriots afterwards. He's mostly just talked about other situations. But yeah, I just don't get why Robert Kraft feels the need to go out there. And I know why, because he feels like everything that happened was given solely to Brady and to Belichick.
He wants his due. He wants his credit.
Just like Jerry Jones wants his due. That's the reason why Jerry Jones is so hell-bent on trying to be the general manager of the Cowboys and, you know, running that team into the ground. Even though he can find talent and they can be good, they're just not going to do winning in the playoffs because he's not very good at finding coaches and finding talent that can get them to the promised land. But I mean, I don't get the fixation on Belichick if you're Robert Kraft. Just move the hell on.
Yeah, just shut up and sign the checks, Rob. I mean, seriously, at this point.
Like, I'll say this. I am very glad that Clark Hunt is in the shadows.
Yes.
I'm very glad that him and the Hunt family are in the shadows when we're talking about how the organization is run. Because, and I hope, like, you know, when Andy's finished up here in Kansas City and he retires and whatnot, I hope we don't have him in the public. We don't have Clark and the Hunt family in the public like that, because I just don't think that's good for your team.
No, I think it's a death nail for an NFL team, especially in
today's
era. Or
sports team in general.
Yeah, fair.
Like, I don't think a front-facing owner like that is ever good for the organization.
I mean, the only one that you could maybe have an argument for is probably George Steinbrenner. And that only worked for about the first decade that he was the owner. I mean, he was kicked out of baseball for a time while he was the owner of the Yankees. But they won a lot of World Series during the late 90s and 2000s. They, you know, that World Series in 09. But after that, it was bad. And it hasn't worked at all since. 913-586-7965 is our number. Final 60 minutes of After Hours coming your way next. Logan Weber here with you alongside producer Chris Unocero. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.